Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Seneca Scene, a podcast from the Herald, the campus newspaper of Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Each week, we bring you an extended interview with a member of the campus community, either faculty, staff, or student. My name is Albright Dworka, and today on the show, we have the Assistant Professor of Entrepreneurial Studies, Craig Talmadge, who will be talking about the Entrepreneurial Studies minor, entrepreneurship in general, and the resources available to students here at HWS.
Professor Talmadge, welcome to the Seneca Scene. I'm so happy to have you here. So today I want to discuss entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial studies minor here at HWS. Before we talk about entrepreneurship, I want to talk about you.
Sure.
You have a PhD in community resources and development and a master's degree in industrial and organizational psychology. So what was your motivation or your ambition for taking this path into entrepreneurship, and how did you end up here?
Okay, so I'll try to keep the story brief, but when I was in college at the University of Arizona in Tucson, I was a business, like a pre-business major, right? So I'm just as bad as the students that I talked to. I wanted to make a lot of money. I wanted to be my own boss. And so you'll hear me say that a lot. No, you want to make a lot of money? No, entrepreneurship's not for you, right? But I was exactly that as a first year. And I took some business classes and I enjoyed them, but it wasn't really a good fit for me. And at that time, I had decided at the early parts of my college career that I really wanted to be like a director for Habitat for Humanity. I thought that would be really, really great to work in nonprofits. What ended up happening is when I graduated college in 2008, that was the start of the recession. And so a lot of the nonprofit jobs that I was seeing in my junior and senior year were development jobs, which meant fundraising. And fundraising in recession and sales not being necessarily my strong suit, I said, you know, that's not necessarily for me. And so I had a professor, his name is Carl Ridley, and he was in the Family Studies and Human Development program. And I decided to do Family Studies and Human Development because I wanted the human aspects of organizations, of understanding family dynamics, because I wanted to work in nonprofits. And Carl Ridley said, well, have you thought about consulting? I said, well, that sounds really interesting. He goes, why don't you check out organizational psychology? And so I applied to a bunch of schools, and I went to Minnesota State University in Mankato, Minnesota, 90 miles southwest of the Twin Cities, and I studied industrial organizational psychology. So it's like psychology applied to the workplace. And so if you go into Target and you want to get a job there, what they'll do is say, hey, fill out this like application. And using what's in that application, they'll try to predict whether or not you'll be a good employee. You take a test to see whether or not you're going to steal from that employee. And it saves them hundreds of thousands of dollars in bad hires. And so I was really, really loving that. Now, I graduated in 2010, which was, if you will, the second dip of the recession. And so all the jobs out there were mostly statistics jobs or data coding, which was great, but it really wasn't what I wanted to do. And I had a professor named Dan Sackow, among other great professors at Minnesota State Mankato, who said, you know, have you ever thought about being a professor? It's a pretty good life, and getting a PhD is a lot of work, but I believe in you and you could do it. And it floored me. I'd never really given it a thought. And I always knew that I wanted to get back to those nonprofit roots. While I really enjoyed the for-profit world and some of the side consulting I'd done and some of the consulting I did for nonprofits in Mankato, I was thrilled. I was thrilled to really get back to it. So I moved back to Arizona, studied community resources development at Arizona State. I was the third graduating class, if you will, from that program. It was a new program that brings together people from tourism and nonprofits and Parks and Rec. And so it was a really interdisciplinary program, which is one of the things I like about HWS is their focus on interdisciplinarity, especially in the liberal arts. And so I was able to get back into that and use sort of that psychology applied to the workplace in psychology applied to communities. And I'd still do a lot of research in that area. And so with entrepreneurship, to finally answer your question, I had the opportunity to teach a course, and I took a course as part of that program at Arizona State in social entrepreneurship. The idea of using entrepreneurship skills, principles, and game-changing, pattern-breaking ideas to solve big problems, wicked problems. And so I fell in love with it. And I did not know, like, I wouldn't consider myself an entrepreneur by any means. I did own a small research consulting business, but I would consider myself entrepreneurial in the aspect of the way that it makes you think about problems has always fascinated me. And it was game changing for me thinking about psychology and entrepreneurship and all the impacts and outcomes. And so that's how I got into it. So I would say, you know, if you want to know how to start a Silicon Valley startup, I'm not the guy, right? But if you want to know how to think differently, I would love to be on that journey with anybody.
That's really interesting. When you say think differently, Can you elaborate on that? Because not a lot of people would say that entrepreneurship is thinking differently. Most people think about it like, I'm going to go make a ton of money in tech or something else. So what's like that entrepreneurship mindset, and how is that different from how most people think about it?
Sure. So entrepreneurship makes you put your ego aside. And so it cannot be about, like, students come to my office and say, I want to make a lot of money. I say, get out of my office. Oh, I want to be my own boss. I say, get out of my office. I say, so, professor, what do I need to do to be in entrepreneurship? I said, you got to tell me you want to change the world. And you can change the world by providing jobs. You can change the world by putting things together that have never been together before. And so with entrepreneurship specifically, there's a lot of research, a lot of work that people are saying about the entrepreneurial mindset, which is good, and that needs to be pursued. For me, entrepreneurship is an applied economic, applied social field, if you will. It's also applied social science practice. And so you see, if you do, like, I'll nerd out. In one of my classes, I teach about this guy named Herbert Davenport. Herbert Davenport was an economic scholar that was not read. And people would kind of make fun of him because they're like, oh, Davenport's too out there. But he talks about a person of science and a person of action. The person of science spends all their time trying to figure out what they don't know. And that's what we do. We try to reduce uncertainty. And that's great. And that's what statistics is built upon. But there's also the person of action. And the person of action says, you know, I've drawn my circle around everything I know, and here's what I still don't know, but I guess I'm going to go do something about it now. You know, you could spend all your time researching the best way to start a grocery store, or you would just start a grocery store after doing the best due diligence that you can, because you'll never figure it out. You'll never figure it out. And, you know, there's best practices and things like that, but you'll never figure it out. You'll spend all your time trying to figure out the perfect thing. And entrepreneurs have to embrace imperfection.
This leads into a great question, which you've probably been asked before. Do you have to drop out of college to be a successful entrepreneur?
Oh, dear God, no. and sorry for anyone for taking the Lord's name in vain there, but no, absolutely not. You shouldn't. You know, here's the thing with modern universities, especially. They have this thing called the library. The library and the library systems we have robust access to resources that you will never get outside of outside in the private industry by yourself. Right, the DIY aspects of entrepreneurship are great, right? You know, the aspects of you have to push yourself and that you have to figure it out and problem solve, that's really, really good. And I understand why some people say, you don't need a college education to do that. No, you don't need a college education to solve problems. But a college education will help you solve problems and will give you the resources. Like, we'll give you access to industry reports that you cannot get outside of a higher education without paying thousands of dollars for them. And so, you know, that's a pretty consumeristic model for me to propose. But I mean, here you're going to have people to help you along your journey. One of the things that entrepreneurs talk about often is how they wish they had a mentor, or they talk about, the only reason I succeeded is because I had a mentor. Well, here they're built in. You know, our job is to, especially the small liberal arts campus, our job is to mentor, our job is to advise. And so I really encourage people not to drop out, because again, if you stick with the program 4 years of your life, how many people out there was the idea so good that they had to do it right then, right now? And the ideas that come through my office are really good, but they require 4 years at least of refinement. And so, no, don't drop out of college, please. If you do, I absolutely respect it. But this movement against college education, it's a false movement. And to sort of say, you don't need college to be an entrepreneur. You don't need college to do a lot of things, but why not use the resources and the people who are going to believe in you and stick with you on the journey even after you graduate? Why not do that?
This brings us right to the Entrepreneurial Studies minor here at HWS. And it's the fastest growing minor on campus and has been for the past couple of years. So I want to talk about that and kind of focus in right here at HWS in Geneva, because there's so much more we could talk about with entrepreneurship. So kind of how does this minor help you prepare for, in this 4 years with that mentorship, for the outside world, and how does it help you develop that mindset that would help you in other areas aside from entrepreneurial studies and starting your own business?
Sure. So I'll leave with the core skills you'll get out of the entrepreneurial studies minor, and then from there we can talk about the development. The individual development. The core skills that we're going to teach you. We're first going to teach you critical thinking, which is at the foundation of liberal arts. But from there, we'll teach you how to do your financial statements. You're going to learn statistics. you'll learn how to communicate mathematical figures effectively. Now, I mean, this is not, if you can do algebra, you can do statistics, you can add, subtract, multiply, divide, do order of operations, you can absolutely move through our program just fine. I mean, there are nuances that you'll have to master. But aside from the financial aspects, you'll also develop some market research skills, how to create surveys, how to go and do qualitative interviews. And again, these are very applied. If you want to really get into the nitty gritty and the real like research robust things, that's why there's amazing social science courses in psychology, sociology, and they have really great research methods classes. We're a minor, right? So we're not going to take it to that further level, but we're going to borrow and use and leverage those things. The other aspect that you're going to get is you're going to have technical writing skills. I tell you, the students that I see, they're brilliant. They can write me the most amazing essay on Moby Dick. They can't write a memo, right? They can't communicate in a business plan, even though we give templates. And it's a skill. It's just not a skill that's naturally learned. And so we teach how to communicate effectively in writing, as well as oral communication, how to communicate effectively in presentations. We actually coach on how to like stand, where to stand, how to do you have a presentation with another person? And we spent a lot of time, especially in the senior capstone, talking about the worst presentations you've given at HWS, and everyone's got a quote unquote war story. So we worked on those skills. And a part of the foundation that gets us through that is, sure, you'll learn how to use PowerPoint and Prezi and things like that, you know, to give presentations, Google Slides. A lot of people love the Google Suite. But we really teach Microsoft Excel for the mathematics aspect. And so we try to use tools that everyone has access to, especially outside of HWS. And so we leverage the Google Suite and Microsoft products. So regarding your mindset aspect, the curriculum is built intentionally. So you start off with a leadership course, which helps you understand you as an entrepreneur, you as an entrepreneurial leader, right? I don't actually let students call themselves entrepreneurs until they've succeeded, because I ask them like, oh, you're an entrepreneur? I'm an entrepreneur. And I'm like, great, are you a contestant on The Bachelorette? Because that person's unemployed, right? So entrepreneur is a term that's ascribed to you, right? And so one of the things we try to teach that I emphasize is on character development, being you as a good person. And ethics is at the foundation of every single course, and there's an ethics component to all our courses. And so you learn about yourself as an entrepreneurial leader, you learn about innovation theories, and you start proposing innovative ideas in the first course, 101. We have a economic principles course, so if students take Econ 160, they don't have to take this course, but in our version of economic principles, I like to call it Econ for non-econ majors. It very much focuses on the applied aspects of microeconomics, from supply and demand to market structures to the big addition that we add that Econ 160 wouldn't have, is we actually have a whole section on entrepreneurship theory from the economics perspective. So we'll talk about theories like Joseph Schumpeter and creative destruction that you wouldn't necessarily get in a foundational economics course. So from there, then we have the quantitative tools course, like I mentioned, Microsoft Excel. You'll do some market research, you'll do some financial projections. And then we have a whole section on data visualization. Yeah, I'm so tired of seeing bad graphs out there. There's so many bad ones. Oh, your graph goes up and to the right. That's great. Everyone does that, right? So there's a lot of misleading graphs out there. Everyone should be very aware about that. And so we try to make sure that we create healthy, good habits so that, one, in that mindset aspect, entrepreneurs can, our aspiring entrepreneurs can look at and critically think about the things that are being presented, but also think about how they can present effectively. And then from there, they take courses from across the curriculum. You can take them from departments like dance to departments like art and architecture, and we have courses in social science where we have these interdisciplinary electives that they take, and as well as an ethics-based courses as well. So we offer some of our own. We have a Doing Good and Doing Well class, which is on ethics. I teach a class on social innovation, which is like, you know, my foundation, my heart. And then we cap it off with a senior capstone. And the senior capstone, we really want to as part of this mindset. Entrepreneurs aren't just economic leaders. They're social leaders. They're leaders in their community. And so we have a community consulting project, which is the first third of the course. So we've consulted for local chefs, local retailers. We've consulted on the viability of a grocery store in Geneva by working with the city. We've looked at selling, marketing sausages, and sort of how do we actually do these collaborative partnerships. And so We're really thrilled to be working with some amazing folks in Geneva for the first term. So they do a marketing financial research project, if you will. It's a pitch, right? So you're like, oh, if I were to market this or have this take off, this is how we would do it. And the entrepreneurs get a lot out of that, and especially ones who are going for local business plan competitions, because we provide them the market research, and they can walk right into a bank or right into this competition and insert it right into their business plan. And people have been successful at getting funding based on some of the work we've done. And so that's the first third. And then the rest of the course, the students work on their own ideas, alone or in teams, mostly in teams. I recommend in teams because it challenges you to think differently. But, you know, our students really can leave with viable nonprofit in business, for-profit business ideas straight out of the capstone. And so not everyone gets there, right? There's a grading scale at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, A, B, C. So not everyone has the most brilliant and beautiful thing. But we really push our students not to think about grades, but think about how is your idea impactful? How is it viable? Are you doing something? Are you creating something that's going to make this world a better place? Because I get a lot of ideas that come through my office. Like one of the ones that always comes through my office is, oh, professor, I want to get an app that uses geolocation to tell me where my friends are at. Like basically like, where's the party at? I always respond kindly if they're a first year, less kindly if they're later on in their academic journey. But I say, have you heard of a text message? Right? Where's your friends at? Text them. Also, Snapchat has location features, which are decently creepy, so we have to watch out for those things. So, you know, these things come through my office often, but I have a lot of great, brilliant ideas that come through my office. I have the best job. But we really tried in that mindset aspect, get students to think beyond also having college students as their customers. College students are terrible customers. One, they don't stay around, they leave. And two, they change, they get older. We all get older, but they're not homogenous across generations. And so challenging students to think beyond that, that's part of that mindset aspect we go for.
Wow, that was a lot of information and a lot of great things. It seems like a lot of people kind of make fun of the business majors or the econ majors here, but you're really teaching them some important skills that help them on later in life, even if they don't do economics. Like that mindset that you mentioned is useful for so many different fields. And it's a great skill to have to know how to use Excel because all the businesses are using it nowadays. But earlier you mentioned the research that you do. And a lot of people don't realize that Entrepreneurial Studies does research. Mm-hmm. So can you, what are the research opportunities that students can do?
Absolutely. So we've developed, I've developed at least in my own aspects, and the Entrepreneurial Studies professors are very really excited about working with students, especially one-on-one in research capacities. Now, the work that I've done has been in independent study projects and other things. The way that it looks is if you want to do an independent study project here at HWS, you have to approach your professor, and generally they're going to tell you they're busy because independent study projects need to be impactful. They need to. It's nothing against you. You probably have a brilliant idea. But one of the things we want to do is make sure that this is going to really help you in your journey and also help the professor in their journey as well. And so what I think about when individuals are wanting to do research, I like to encourage our students, especially those who are going to be moving forward with ideas post-college, say, why don't you become an expert in that field? Remember, I did a project with a young man who was developing drowning detection software and drowning detection devices. And so what did we do? He said, well, I want to use artificial intelligence and machine learning to detect drowning. And I said, well, how does that work? He goes, well, you need to train the device to know what drowning looks like. I said, well, I don't know anything, so I'm not a computer science guy. And he says, well, who do we go talk to? He goes, lifeguards. We talked to lifeguards. And so we did a summer research project surveying lifeguards and asking about their willingness to use artificial intelligence and machine learning devices in order to help them do their jobs better. I mean, when that article comes out someday, they're gonna say, hey, this guy in college is an expert in this field. Imagine pointing to that. Well, you know, I have students who will engage with me, they wanna do market research. Okay, I can teach you how to do qualitative coding. And so I just got an article published. It got delivered to my office via paper. Some journals still do that. Most of them are just digital now. But via paper showing that the work that two students did, helping code responses to a question about what do individuals value about lifelong learning. And this was for a research I did in collaboration with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, which is a network for older adults. And so we do other aspects too, where we look at the practices of the NCAA and how they are helping players, and you know, the amateurism rule, and looking at should we be paying players, and that's some really kind of tricky waters to navigate. We also look at aspects. I have one student who had really helped me kick off a research, new research trajectory on the dark side of entrepreneurship and sort of the negative impacts that entrepreneurs can have, but that they don't even realize, which informs entrepreneurial ethics. And the whole thing came about is he wrote a profile paper about Pablo Escobar because he liked the show Narcos. And so here we are, the show Narcos has kicked off an entirely new research trajectory for me and has been able to encompass other students, students who want to research the cannabis industry and how legalization is occurring across the United States, to looking at other aspects like terrible situations with like Billy McFarland's and the Fyre festivals and, you know, Elizabeth Holmes and the Theranos scandals. Like, I'm fascinated by that because we need to stop those things from happening. And we have students here who, you know, have enjoyed the documentaries, but are also passionate about, you know, making the world a better place. And we don't need to be spending billions of dollars of investment money on things that are not going to work or people are going to defraud us, right? Or we're going to put people's lives in danger, like, you know, and ruin people's savings like Bernie Madoff. So that's something that the students can get into. Basically what happens is I tell students, come to my office with three ideas that you want to learn more about. We're going to find the one that you're excited most about and that I'm excited most about. And out of those three, we'll probably find one that's going to work for us. And then we set up four milestones for what's going to look like a successful independent study project. And generally it includes doing some research, seeing what other people have done out there, doing a lot of reading. And then we propose some sort of either survey or some sort of analysis. And then we do the analysis and write it up. And it's super fun. And it's super fun. And I'm a social scientist, too. So I'm always open to expanding into more historical pieces and looking at more scientific aspects. I never thought I'd have a paper that talked about artificial intelligence. But I think there's a lot of professors here who are willing to be pushed. And I think that's a cool thing about a small liberal arts college that I've really enjoyed.
Wow. That's an amazing opportunity that students could do all that research while they're still an undergraduate student. But that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of resources that's available for people that are interested in entrepreneurship. Can you walk me through some of the other resources that are available for students here at HWS?
Absolutely. So we actually kind of brand the Entrepreneurial Studies minor, the Centennial Center, and the Bizzuto Center for Entrepreneurship as entrepreneurship at HWS. So we have an ecosystem, if you will. And so entrepreneurial studies minor, you know, we have a capacity. We wish that every single student who wanted to be an entrepreneurial studies minor can be. And we really fight hard for those who really want to be. So if you come, if you're really interested in entrepreneurial studies, the entrepreneurial studies minor, please come talk to me. Be glad to get you just set through the program. But that's, you know, our mission at entrepreneurship at HWS is to make sure that entrepreneurship can touch every single student on campus. And so we have very many other robust aspects that we have. The Centennial Center, which has been around longer than the Entrepreneurial Studies minor, hosts an idea lab, a pitch competition, a summer sandbox accelerator. And if you don't know what incubators, accelerators, and co-working spaces and all those things are, please come talk to me. I'm glad to walk you through it. But the aspect is, if you have an idea that you are passionate about, you should go to the Centennial Center and talk to Amy Forbes, the director, Kate Finn, one of the other directors, and Ed Bizzari, one of the directors that we have, and they will help you. They will help you take your idea and maybe refine your idea and maybe change your idea completely, but they'll help you move it through a system that we've created that will help you understand who are your customers in a nonprofit aspect, who is the community that you're serving, and help you go through all the resources that we have. You can win money. You can get money. You can apply for money and not even have to compete in some aspects where you can work on your idea here. You don't have to drop out of college. You can work on your idea here and get funding to do that. And the Centennial Center has great programs. The Idea Lab, which is one of our most robust programs, you'll get to learn from real entrepreneurs and they'll coach you on your ideas and help you refine them. The pitch competition, you can win $10,000 and you compete. We generally have a lot of applicants that we narrow down, and then there's generally four sort of, and it's a big fun event that we have in the Scanley Center, in the Vandervoort Room. The Bizzuto Center for Entrepreneurship is our incubator space. And so it is a space dedicated to it for, it's a space where individuals can and teams can work on projects. Now you can go down there and do your homework and that's fine, but it's gonna be a noisy place, right? This is the spot where you're going to be drawing on whiteboards. You're going to be figuring these things out. We're actually doing some renovations now. We want to create this maker space on the third floor from where you can, you know, even sew, if you will, like different prototypes. And we'll get, you know, eventually we'll have 3D printers, and we have drafting tables that the Sustainable Community Development Minor Program has. And there's just so many things that we're really looking forward to. The first floor is set. And the second floor is nearly set. It'll be done this summer, and then the third floor comes next. And in that area, you can push the tables around, you can get set up with your teams, and you can work on group projects for classes, sure, and they don't have to just be entrepreneurship classes. You can study, sure, throw on your headphones if you need to, because it will be noisy. But it's a space that we run our entrepreneurship programs, again, Centennial Center programs, and the Entrepreneurial Studies Minor programs, but others have jumped on. Sustainable Community Development, American Studies, a number of other individuals are now using the space. And we want it to be a space for community engagement where you can work with individuals in the Geneva community. It's a great place, and it's very accessible for us to bring in guest speakers. We've had events there. But students can start their own events and do them there. They can host club meetings there if they want. And so we really want it to be a place where students get to engage in the Geneva community. It's on campus technically because it's a campus building, but it's off campus. It's in downtown Geneva, walking distance to some amazing restaurants, really great entrepreneurial hubs like our co-working space, Port 100, and other folks are down there. And we're right across from City Hall. The city managers often come down to the Bizzuto Center and help us out with things. And so it's a space, and that's what we're trying to do with our ecosystem. We're trying to make Geneva, in many ways, a collaborative laboratory for learning. And many folks in Geneva, many entrepreneurs in the Finger Lakes, are right on board for being a part of that journey. And a lot of the students are getting a ton out of it. And they're getting jobs, they're getting internships, they're getting experiences. You know, we don't necessarily want all of our students to stay in Geneva forever, but if you want to, you can, because there's opportunities here that we're providing, and experiences that you can stay here even after you graduate for a little bit to work on your ideas. And that's part of our entire ecosystem.
Wow, that's amazing. And I've never heard it put like that ecosystem where we're connecting with Geneva and helping grow these entrepreneurs and these businesses too. Because a lot of people that even at the pitch competition came back and started their business, Pizza Pazzo and Space Vinyl, right here in Geneva. But I want to zoom out a little and kind of look at what does entrepreneurship look like in the Finger Lakes?
Absolutely. So for the ecosystem thing, I'm sure a bunch of biology professors are not going to like what I said, but that's absolutely fine. So if we look at the social system, if you will, or the environment that is the Finger Lakes, this is a developing area in the best senses of the word. You know, this used to be kind of a sleepy area, an area that, you know, the wineries have been around, but they weren't really known. There were a few top names. And then all of a sudden, they started getting really good at making wines. And all of a sudden, now we have this food and beverage haven. Like, Geneva has been called the gem of the Finger Lakes. And, you know, I didn't know where the heck Geneva, New York was. I moved from Phoenix, Arizona to Geneva. And I said, what is this? You know, it looked like a cute town. It's not a town, it's a city. Geneva, the city, is uniquely urban. That's their model. And very much they are, because of the environment that we're in. This city and this Finger Lakes area is finding ways to innovate in agriculture and the social aspects of agriculture, especially around craft food and beverage, that you cannot even imagine. There are 43 breweries in the Finger Lakes, and half of them started 5 years ago, right? So you're seeing this entrepreneurism just take off and skyrocket. You know, students who want to start a business here or like pilot a business here, this is a great opportunity. You can get a grant through the city for very, very low interest. And you can start your business and test out your product for a year or two or even longer if you like it, right in our downtown. You know, the real estate prices are very fair. You know, our taxes are high, and for good reason. We want really good schools and other things. But the aspect of could I experiment here, or are there people to learn from? Like, ooh, you know, I'm moving to a small liberal arts college. They have really small cities. What's in here? You'd be surprised on the good food that's around. Like, just eat outside of Saga every once in a while, and you're going to, I mean, I know it can be a little costly, but you can find some deals. But you can experience innovations in recreation and hiking. You can experience innovations in agriculture and production. You know, like getting back to the sustainable farming is happening. We have We have brilliant people in sustainable farming right here in this area. And, you know, Cornell Agriculture is right here. And there's some fantastic individuals who are actually starting like retail businesses or doing remote businesses where they're doing graphic design. This is a nice and great place to live. And I'm amazed by the entrepreneurs that I meet. And he's like, oh, you do that? How do you do that? Well, you know, it's the 21st century. You can almost work from anywhere in a lot of different jobs. We have people running marketing and ad agencies right out of Geneva, and they're making a bunch of money, and they're living a really great life.
I want to press you some more on that question. Given that these businesses just started 5 years ago, what do you think Geneva and HWS in Geneva will look like in, let's say, 10 or 20 years?
That's a really great question. Now, I'm no prophet, but I will say that the food and beverage industry will continue to grow because of tourism. And so this has not been a tourist destination for a long time. And now we just hosted the Finger Lakes group, if you will, the FLX group. They have FLX Frybird, FLX Table, FLX Wienery, and now FLX Rusty Pig. These are all brilliant restaurants by a world-renowned chef and a great team. They just hosted an international Riesling conference, which has been hosted in New Zealand to Napa, and now Finger Lakes. Geneva is on the map for Rieslings, and which they've been on the map for Rieslings for a while. That's the best wine in the Finger Lakes. But now we're bringing international attention. And so, you know, tourism makes up not the majority of the food and beverage revenue, but it's going to continue to grow. And so it'll be interesting to see how the city and the Finger Lakes region in general can adapt to that. You know, we're seeing a rise in Airbnbs, and there's going to be some changes in how those are regulated, and they're going to see changes in hotels. And so it's going to be pretty neat, actually, to see what's going to happen here. In the summer is where most of that happens, right? So hopefully we get students to stay around more in the summer. But if you're going to see our program evolve with entrepreneurial studies to adapt to that. You know, our hope, and this isn't completely public knowledge, but I'll put it out there as part of my sort of push towards positivity, if you will. I think that the entrepreneurial studies program, as it grows, will be able to offer specialized tracks to people. So if you're really interested in food and beverage tourism or food and beverage aspects, you can actually pursue that and really spend more time on that. If you're interested in arts and entrepreneurship, our arts scene here is quite incredible. And our music scene, surprisingly, is good. I have seen some amazing musicians and some amazing things at our local restaurants and at wineries and other places that are accessible to students as well. And you can do arts and entrepreneurship, dance and entrepreneurship. You're going to see if you're fascinated in maybe finance aspects, we could do some of that. I mean, if you're interested in sort of science and entrepreneurship, we will push in those aspects. Because, I mean, we need entrepreneurs to discover the best ways to make beer and the ways that are most sustainable. We need to find entrepreneurs who can create arts that really challenge us to think about how do we create a better society. And entrepreneurship as that mindset can help push us that direction. And I think the close relationship that the city and Hobart and William Smith Colleges and the community of Geneva have, it continues to be leveraged in the right ways. People here are very authentic. They don't try to stab each other in the back in any sort of way. I've seen that in other communities. And the colleges really try not to take advantage of the community and sort of use the community as a place of doing research projects. What we look at is how do we get our students engaged? And if you're really interested in community engagement, you really should check out the Center for Community Engagement and Service Learning. Katie Flowers is the director. She's done an amazing job at really growing the relationship between the City of Geneva and Hobart and William Smith Colleges. We are really known for having so many students serve on nonprofit boards in this area. And there's a lot of nonprofits in Geneva. So if you're interested in working with kids or working on clean water projects or really working on things from the environment to older adults, we have individuals with learning challenges. We have the resources and the connections to get you involved. And we actually do a lot of entrepreneurship projects that part of that. One of my social innovation classes, we looked at and completed a digital map for Hobart and William Smith Colleges of all the accessible restrooms on campus. And two students came to me and did this. And now you just go on the website and you'll be able to find them.
Wow, that's really inspiring to hear about all the possible growth that's coming there. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners right now are getting excited and inspired by the things you just said. And that brings up an interesting question. Like, what's the number one piece of advice that you'd have for, let's say, new students that are coming in, they're listening to this podcast and are thinking about entrepreneurship?
It's a great question. I've wrestled with this for a number of years. And so if you come to any of my classes or you come outside my door, you're going to see a list. And on that list, it says Talmage's character ideals. There are things that I ask people to work on. There are things that I just ask myself to work on. But one of them that's on that list, and I'm glad to share it with anyone who would like to email me, or I post it on Facebook, but one of them is always be ready to challenge your assumptions. Because you have no idea when you first get here as a first year what college is going to be like. You've seen a lot of movies, you've heard your older siblings and friends talk about it, but every college is different and every experience is different. And a lot of the students who come here say, I want to do this, right? I wanted to be a business major. I wanted to make a lot of money, be my own boss. And I had professors that challenged my assumptions on that. The professors will challenge your assumptions. Your friends, the student activities will challenge your assumptions. And so be prepared when you come with an idea or without an idea to sort of rethink how you think about the world. Don't disregard your heritage and where you come from, but really be ready to sort of open your mind, because that's what college is for. And we'll give you the skills in an entrepreneurial studies minor that'll help you be able to pursue your idea in a viable fashion, in a way that makes the world better. But if you're not open to feedback, you're not open to listening, you're not willing to research and challenge those assumptions, then you're not going to be able to thrive like many others around you will.
Thank you for that great piece of advice. I'm sure a lot of people that are listening right now will take that to heart. But I want to get back to you. And as our last question always on the Seneca Scene is, what would you like your personal legacy to be here at HWS and in general in life?
Oh, that's a big question. You know, I don't know what that will be. I can attempt to posit some guesses. I will say that here's something that really sort of floored me a bit. I asked some students who would come back, that graduates, alums, they'd come back for a sports game. And I said, you know, what did entrepreneurial studies mean to you? He said, well, you know, we really like the people and the relationships we built. But in my job interview, I was able to talk about our community consulting project. And they told me that was the reason that I got the job. But also, professor, I use Microsoft Excel every day. You know? So I think about what I hope that I leave as a legacy is not how many publications I've had or how many students we've worked with. And, you know, we're the biggest minor on campus, and we worked hard for it. And we really have amazing students we get to work for. But I suppose if I could say, what could I leave behind? I hope that I leave a legacy that encourages individuals to think about how they impact the community around them. And that entrepreneurship is a gift. It's a tool. It's a human phenomenon. Chimpanzees are not entrepreneurs, right? Goldfish are not entrepreneurs. Humans are. And we have exchanges. That's the economics, study human exchange. We have exchanges every day with people. And every single opportunity, like every single exchange, we have the chance to make the world better. You know, one of the things, again, on my list is be kinder than you need to be. And if students could just think about that and really just take that to heart, be kinder than you need to be. Just give as much as you can give, even if you're having the worst day. You know, the community members that you work with, the community that you're a part of, will be better. And I know that's kind of idealistic and pie in the sky, but, you know, I hope that when individuals are asked, you know, as entrepreneurs or working in industry or in nonprofits, they're asked, where did you go to school? That actually, I hope they're not asked, because they can say, I know you went to Hobart and Williams Smith Colleges because of the person you are. And if I could leave that as a legacy, and that's pretty big, that's what I would want.
Professor Talmage, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to sit down and be on the podcast with us.
It was great being here. Thank you for the opportunity. And I really look forward to listening to the next people that you talk to and learning from them as well.
That was Professor Talmage. If you'd like to get involved in the entrepreneurship program, then you can send him an email at talmadge@hws.edu. Thank you for tuning in to the Seneca Scene. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from, or on the Herald website by going to hwsherald.com/podcast. Our show today was written and produced by Albright Dworka. Our team at the Herald also includes Audrey Platt, Grace Rubel, Henry Doerr, and Gianna Gonzalez. Our partners at WEOS are Kelly Walker and Greg Cottrell. We've recorded this episode live in Stern Hall. From the campus of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, this has been the Seneca Scene. I'm Albright Dworka, and thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time.